Arthur, how are you, sir?
Morning, guys.
So Adam Silver talking, the commissioner of the NBA, talking about Vancouver and looking back and looking ahead. Tell me this, and we've talked about this before, and it's been a while since we've had a chance to catch up on this. Is Vancouver still a viable marketplace for the NBA, in your opinion?
Look, it was a viable market back in the 90s. I go in ad nauseam, so to speak, at why it's not here. And to the extent that the brand of the NBA, never mind the marketplace in Vancouver, there's no question in my mind, Vancouver would just, they just nail it. We would have a very proud franchise in the NBA, and that's no wonder the commissioner felt that way. I know David Stern has told me that in person, that it was a big mistake. So it's a sad thing, but it is reality, and it's sort of in the past. We just have to accept it for what it is. But imagine having a franchise for $125 million U.S. and today worth potentially $2 billion.
Yeah, no kidding.
Not a bad to return on your
investment. Oh, if only you hung on to that one, right?
if you don't mind.
Yeah, fair enough.
Arthur, 2.2 million Canadians watched that basketball game on Sunday night. Does that number surprise you? Does the growth of this game surprise you as to what it's become in the last 15 years?
Well, not so much, because I think when we did our first initial, or before we bought the franchise, we did a lot of research on the marketplace, both Canada and across, and British Columbia, of course. And it's what it is, of course, it transcends male, female, you, young and old. Everybody is a fan of this sport. And probably because when they went to either high school or elementary school, they played the game. In some form, even if it was just for fun. There's someone's had a basketball. I certainly won't say that I was any good at it, but I sure had a basketball in my hand. So that can't be said for hockey, and it can't be said for other sports. So the appetite for basketball in this country is massive, and I think it would have been wildly successful in Vancouver, and I'm not surprised at all that Toronto has that kind of following because, for the moment, sad to say, it's the only franchise in our country.
Arthur, the business community, you see so many companies got up, left Vancouver, went to Toronto for head office. Is the business community able to afford an NBA team? Some of these guys are making $25, $30 million a year now, Arthur.
So the payroll, this is where one of the biggest changes has taken place. The payroll virtually to the dollar is covered. So in other words, the cap is covered by the broadcast agreement, much like the NFL. So before you even have to sell a suite, a ticket, anything of that nature, a souvenir item with royalties, before any of that takes place, you've got your payroll covered. It changes the model completely from the past. Mm-hmm. And I understand, in my day, our broadcast agreement jointly with the Canadian as well as the U.S. Was probably sufficient to cover off 65% of the payroll. So now we're talking 100% of the payroll. So it's a whole different business model than it was.
Arthur Griffiths with us here on Sportsnet 650. And when you look at some of those numbers, investors is, Francesco Accolini was on this show last fall and kind of suggested that, the idea of the NBA from his standpoint, probably not a viable option, but do you get a sense that there's enough people with deep pockets that could absorb something along those lines here?
No, 100%. The biggest challenge that this market would face is where to play. Now, the first one, of course, is finding the franchise that would be either a new one, expansion, or relocated. But the biggest challenge is finding a franchise that, finding a place to play.
What do you mean?
The arena. Well, Rogers might work. In the sense that you might be able to make a deal with the Aquilinis, but if not, maybe you need to do something a little bit more dramatic. Who knows? I just think that that would be a hurdle to overcome for sure.
Because no one wants to buy a team and then pay rent for a place to play. For the most part, if you own the team, you own the arena, don't you?
There are a lot of exceptions to that rule, of course. But I think in this context, in this marketplace, you would certainly want to be at least a 50% holder of your domain, so to speak.
Did you find when you owned the team that it was the same sports fan? Is it that different now? Because I always thought, you know, the great part was in our job, Wednesday night you got the Bulls coming to town, Thursday night you got the Blues coming to play. You know, the arena was busy all the time, and I always thought, there can't be someone that's got season tickets to both. Did you find it was a very distinct and different crowd that went to games and hockey games? We had a little bit of an overlap, but there was a difference?
It sort of goes back to my first point. The franchise fan base was certainly overlap, for sure, 100%. There was lots of overlap. But it was the crowd that goes to a hockey game today, that I'm not saying, it's certainly not, this isn't a blanket statement. It's usually a bunch of guys, it's work-related, guys, you know, executives and so on. And but the basketball crowd was your three-year-old or four-year-old going to a game with mom and dad, or even a bunch of moms. It was a completely different demographic in that regard. Much, much easier today. And then frankly, at the end, the entertainment factor, a young kid doesn't have to understand the game of basketball to enjoy this spectacle, whereas hockey, you kind of have to, otherwise they get bored. That's my experience, having five children.
That's good experience right there. When you you once mentioned to us that the NBA in this market was more profitable than the NHL. Can you explain that compared to how the Grizzlies were almost more of a lucrative product than the Canucks at that time, which we look at this as being a hockey market?
Well, the simple fact is that the time at which I'm referring to was that in the 1990s, we had work stoppages in hockey that made the business perilous. We didn't have a financial model that, we still had to pay for the arena debt. We still had to pay operating costs of, staff that weren't hockey players, because it was a lockout or a strike. So to the extent that we were short on our revenue base to support our business model was the biggest challenge that we had. And the second challenge, of course, was the Canadian dollar. We were underwater, paying all of our athletes, both American and Canadian, or both NBA and NHL, U.S. dollars. And our revenue, for the most part, in both leagues, was substantially Canadian. We did have more U.S. revenue, of course we did, from the NBA, but it wasn't. So that's why the model looked differently, and that's why it was more lucrative, if you want to call it that, or less costly NBA than it was the NHL.
And Arthur, it's not like the Canadian dollar is in a wonderful spot right now. Why have we not heard more about the Canadian teams and the Canadian dollar? What structure did they put in place that it hasn't happened that much? That conversation in hockey.
Oh, well, because the NHL has spent an awful lot of time at generating U.S.-related dollars. So any event that they put on, World Cup, outdoor games, all of those all-star games, all of those revenues are pooled and shared, and those revenues are U.S. dollars. One. Two, as the broadcast agreement that's the NHL broadcast with across the U.S. and Canada, but the U.S. is U.S. dollars. So to the extent that as I just said a little bit a minute ago, it's you've hedged your operating costs for your payroll. So the distribution of those league-generated revenues from those sorts of streams are USD. So rather than hedging, as I said a minute ago, 35-40% of your payroll, you're probably maybe, now it all depends on which city you're in, but you're probably underwater, maybe not. You're not doing a dollar for dollar or payroll, but you're certainly close to, I would think, 80-85% of your payroll has got to be covered by those revenues that are generated by the league.
Arthur, are you actively, looking for investors in the Vancouver region, or maybe even out of town guys to maybe someday put together a bid?
Well, I certainly recognize that voice. and I also recognize where that came from. But no, I'm not at this point. I'm busy running a company that's taking up much of my time. But I'm a believer. I really genuinely believe that this would be a massively successful market for the right group. At a moment's notice, I'd love to throw my opinion, but more importantly, my experience behind something, if someone wanted to do that. I'm a The worry that I would have personally is that I would be trying to, put Humpty Dumpty back together or repatriate the past. I just simply have moved on on a full-time basis from that kind of an experience, because it would be full-time.
Well, speaking of your experience, we appreciate you sharing some of that wisdom and experience and knowledge with us here this morning and all of our listeners. So nice to catch up again, Arthur, and even for Rick as well.
Thanks, Arthur.
Yeah, Arthur. Arthur, if you ever want to get into radio full time back again, let me know. I could use some good wingers. Believe me.
Oh my gosh.
And you know you're 10 times better than these two guys, Arthur.
Nah,
come on.
You started it, Arthur.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
You know the radio.
Arthur's a good pal. Arthur had a great radio show, and he was great on the radio. Anytime, buddy.
Thanks, Rick. Cheers, guys.
Sportsnet 650.